It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up!
Welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined alongside, as always, 6 feet apart now. Scotty Bordelon, there's a good distance between us. And all right, Scotty, no serious introduction for this podcast, but the last two episodes of The Last Dance were pretty phenomenal. With really talking about Dennis Rodman,
he's an electric personality. The thing that I think I learned from the last couple episodes is that Carmen Electra still got it.
Yeah, Carmen Electra. And then my favorite part was MJ was going, well, he was in Vegas in bed with, I'm not gonna say who. And then the next shot is
not gonna say what's around the room.
Yeah. The next shot was perfect too. It was Carmen Electra going, it was me. I was in the bed. It was me.
That was great. I had no idea about that story. I'm sure that was news to a lot of people. But just think about, like, they trusted Dennis, but they knew that for Dennis to perform at maximum potential, you had to give him that rope
a little bit.
You had to, like, give him an in-season vacation. To send him to Las Vegas was... That was a hairy bet that they made with themselves.
And I don't necessarily know that they trusted them, because MJ the entire time is going, he ain't coming back. He ain't coming back. And then the graphic was perfect as well that said, Dennis Rodman was in Vegas for 24 hours with permission, 42 hours with permission. And then it kept ticking up and it said without permission. I thought that was good. And then it just tells you how important Rodman was to this team, though, that they would let him take a midseason vacation while MJ is just trying to carry the team on his back. And then B, that MJ in the 1990s. So this man doesn't have, like, cell phones. Technologies are not really prominent. You can't find my friends on Dennis Rodman here and be like, oh, he's at the Bellagio.
You can't share locations on your,
your
bag phone.
You have the greatest player of all time in the game at that time going to find Dennis Rodman in Vegas during the middle of a season. That's how important Dennis Rodman was to this team.
Yeah, I'm wondering what was running through Carmen Electra's mind when she heard the banging on the door. Because, I mean, you're hanging out with Dennis Rodman. Dennis
right.
Rodman, there's no telling what that man got into. There's no telling who's looking for that man. Maybe he skipped out on somebody the night before, you know, in the casinos or
in
a club or something.
You don't know.
You have no idea who's on the other side of that door. That would have... She had the appropriate response to that. She just went and hid. That's what I would have done too.
To run and hide for sure.
Another thing that was crazy was when Dennis got back, the practice, Phil was like, we're going to do this drill where I'm going to blow the whistle. Everybody's going to start running.
Yes.
And the person at the back
of the
line.
Have you ever done that Indian drill before when you're in basketball?
Sucks.
It's terrible. Yeah, it was terrible.
But Dennis killed it. It took the team 4 laps to catch up with him.
He's like, just been on a... I don't know.
He's been on a 48-hour, 72-hour bender.
Yes, and then all of a sudden comes back and is sprinting.
Immediately comes back and he's still in, like, top shape. Crazy.
Also fantastic that, I think it was in the first 2 episodes, whenever they're interviewing him as he's walking out of a basketball game, out of the locker room, wherever, and he's just got a nice beer in his hand. I'm like, that is just so 1990s of him just walking around with a nice ice-cold one in his hand while he's answering these interviews right after he played a basketball game. Like, nice.
Yeah, it was great. I think one of the best quote from the last couple episodes to me, and I can't remember who said it. It could have been it was Gary Payton. Gary Payton's got a reputation, like, nicknames the glove. Like, he's one of the more tenacious on-ball defenders that the game has seen. And talked his trash, but he said that Dennis Rodman was a guy who just got into the game and he effed everything up. That was a fascinating, you know, 5 second quote from him. That was awesome.
And they still don't like the Pistons either. They still don't like them.
MJ don't like Isaiah Thomas. Like, yeah. he made no bones about it.
Yeah, that was something. And he was, he said, well, yeah, hindsight's 20/20 over here. You can say whatever you want, but in that moment.
Yeah, he's had time to think about it since those days.
Yeah. Anyway, great. It makes me look forward to Sunday night for sure.
Yeah.
And especially in this time when there's not a whole lot of sports going on. It's highly entertaining. The ratings stayed high, so we know a bunch of you are watching it as well.
Mal and I have now gone from, my wife and I have gone from, you know, we got really into this season of American Idol,
mm-hmm.
which aired on Sundays originally. We're pushing that back to Monday nights now because we got to watch The Last Dance. We got to keep up with it.
Yeah, it's popcorn worthy. Pop your popcorn, sit on the couch. Megan didn't watch the first two, but then she was watching. She was in the living room, and I was turning it on. I'm like, I'm watching this, and we only have the one TV in the living room. And I'm like, I'm gonna take the TV at 8 o'clock for the next five Sundays. Sorry.
Right.
And she's like, whatever, and that's no big deal. So I think she was doing something else the other Sunday, but she was in the living room, so she sat down. And she was playing on her, I think she has an iPad, so she's playing on her iPad, and then she'd look up, and I'd catch her, and she would be watching it too. I'm like, that's how you know it's a pretty good documentary, is when she's tuning in. And then she was amazed at all the people that could just sit there and rattle off names. She's like, there's all these old writers, and they're on this, and they're just rattling off names of people on the roster and who they're playing. And she goes, and then she looked at me and goes, never mind, that'll probably be you. I was like, yeah, well, maybe. But yeah, I think it's a really good documentary to keep not just my attention, who's a rabid sports fan and really wants to learn more about MJ during that era, but also, you know, Megan, who's just very casual about it and going, Scottie Pippen, I've heard of him before. Where is he from? Kind of thing.
Hamburg. Shout out to Hamburg.
Hamburg, baby. UCA product. All right. Well, on today's basketball podcast in Mid-America, we're not just going to talk about The Last Dance. Although for the next, you know, few of these, we might start every podcast about The Last Dance. But we also got some good information. Scotty talked to Corey Williams about his first year as an assistant coach at the University of Arkansas. Also, Mike Nabors and the women's basketball team pulled in a huge commitment.
Huge.
In Northside's Jersey Wolfenbarger. So we'll talk to Scotty about that. He was able to talk to her coach. And then there's also this kind of strange connection of Fort Smith Northside to the college ranks. Arkansas's got a few on their roster. There's not just basketball, but also a football connection there as well. So we might talk a little bit about that. And then we might just have a little bit of 1994 national championship trivia for you. Just a little bit, a little teaser for you that we might get up on wholehogsports.com later so that you can test your skills. And it's not necessarily easy. Scotty asked me a few of these questions earlier. Without the multiple choice, I would have been lost.
I asked my dad because, I mean, I wanted to see how good the questions were. And my dad has the 94 title game, I'm sure like a lot of Arkansas fans, like on VHS mm-hmm. at his house. He's watched it Lord knows how many times. And, you know, just like I wanted to ask him, like, how well do you think you remember the 93-94 title season? And I sent him probably 5 or 6 questions, and I think he got – 3 or 4 of them. So I felt on some of those questions, I felt pretty validated. I didn't want them to be like too specific that, you know, nobody would really remember.
Like, what was the colored jersey that Arkansas won and or wore in one of their 3 losses, and what logo was on the bottom right knee?
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing like that, but we might tease a couple questions and give you some. They're all multiple choice as of right now, so we might give you guys a couple of them, see how well you do.
All right, well then, without further ado, let's get into it, and let's talk about Corey Williams. Scotty, what did you learn about Corey Williams in his first year, and what did he learn about Arkansas in his first year?
So I learned that he got hired initially on his birthday in 2019, which was pretty interesting. I talked to him, I think it was, we're recording on April 29th. I talked to him. Let me go back. Are we in April? Yeah, we're in April. So yeah. I talked to him on April 23rd, day before his 1 year anniversary since he got hired. And he told me one thing that I thought was really interesting was that, you know, when he first got hired, I mean, he was traveling literally all over the country trying to find players. And he was trying to get, you know, acclimated to what Eric Musselman was trying to build at Arkansas. And he was just like, "Coach, you point me in a direction and I'll go. I'm ready to go." And that's, you know, that's what I titled the story, "I'm Ready to Go." And he told me that there was a 2-day trip that started in Fayetteville, took him to Phoenix and then Las Vegas. And then the next day he flew from there to New Jersey and then he drove to Philadelphia and he came back. Like, can you imagine that travel over just a couple of days? Like, yeah. I've been to Vegas a couple of times. That flight out to Vegas is an animal. Like, it's not exactly a ton of fun. Especially from here, imagine that's like a 3.5 hour, maybe 4 hour flight. It's not fun, but Matt, if you're listening, I'll do it in November. If there's a basketball season, I'll do it willingly. But just the travel initially, you know, he called that travel. I mean, it was wearing him out, but he was also energized by a new job. And I think that helped, you know, kind of help him push past being tired. And so another thing that I found interesting that he told me, you know, he was asked him if there were, you know, because Musk talked about several times during the season that each assistant coach and some of the support staff they have, they're responsible for the scouting report and the game plan on a particular opponent.
Yeah, this always seemed really interesting to me about, I really wanted to know if they kept track of who won.
That's what I asked him, if there was like a competition almost between the assistant coaches, like, "Oh, my scout did better than your scout in this game. The last scout that he did was Vanderbilt in the SEC tournament. He was really proud of that scout, not only because they played Vanderbilt pretty well and we could see that game plan working out. I mean, like right in front of our eyes, like they were not going to let Saban Lee have the ball in his hands all the time. Like they would run a soft trap at him in the half court, and they would give it up to a guy that we'd never heard of who would take, you know, I think took like 4 or 5, maybe 6 threes. I mean, that was playing right into their hands. He was really proud of that one, because it got him to 20 wins. Thought that was a big accomplishment for this team. And he was also pretty proud of the first scout that he was responsible for, which was the season opener against Rice.
That was a good scout.
And so when he told me that, I was like, okay, so this is your first game on the bench under Mus. What are the feelings like? Like, what's the feeling? Like, what are you thinking going into that first game, knowing that you all, like, not only is it your first game on the bench as an assistant coach at Arkansas, but you're responsible for the scout and the plan going into that game. And he was like, man, there was a lot of anxiety going into that game, but turned out pretty well. Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe scored 56 points between them. Rice turned the ball over 25 times. They were 2-25 from three. And I remember writing after that game that Arkansas posted the best defensive efficiency rating of Musselman's college head coaching career, according to Ken Pom. So that one turned out
all right.
That one turned out pretty well.
Yeah, that's when, at the very start of the season, I think Arkansas fans were impressed just by the sheer defensive effort that Musselman's teams were putting up, because they were holding teams to under 25 points and a half, under 15, under 20 points and a half at some junctures. And your eyes are almost open that this is the new regime and they're playing a hard-nosed brand of defense, and something that the Razorback fan, and I think even me, at least in the media, wasn't expecting full out, like, these guys would buy into the system right away, A, and B, that they had the personnel to do that on a defense. And I get it that they were playing a little less talented teams than we saw against the SEC in a little better competition, that teams started to pick that up a little bit and started scoring a little bit more. But even during those games, you could see the defensive intensity, and this team had really bought into Musselman and Williams's and everybody else's system.
Yeah, they smothered teams at the beginning of the year. Like, it was Rice, North Texas, Texas Southern, and like, I understand like those are not world beater type programs, but they suffocated. I mean, they suffocated those teams, and yeah, that was. I also asked him about, you know, just the being around the team the day that they realized the season was going to come to an end, and he said everybody was just, you know, they were just in shock. Like, they didn't know what to think. They didn't know what to say. And he said that morning, the team came down for breakfast and Mus hadn't made it down yet. And all of a sudden Mus comes in and he's like, hey, the season's over. And everybody's like, what do you mean? And so it turned from like a team breakfast where they're going over prep for South Carolina, which Williams was also heavily involved in. It turned from that into like a senior breakfast where all the seniors get up and they talk and they, you know, just kind of go over what they're feeling right then and there, knowing that their college career is basically over. He said everybody was numb, and I completely get it. I can't imagine the emotion in that room. It had to have been, I mean, you saw Mus got overcome with emotion, started crying. And I'm sure he was far from the only person in that room that was like that.
Williams had been a head coach at Stetson for a few years before he was hired by Musselman.
Six, I think, yeah.
What did he learn? Or, I mean, can you tell us that he learned as an assistant coach under Musselman in year one?
Yeah, I specifically asked him that, and I've asked Mus that too, and Corey Williams kind of echoed what Mus said, is that you can always still grow and improve as a coach. And one thing that working with this coaching staff, he understood that you can always, you know, kind of enhance the stuff that you've learned in the past and make it better. And being a head coach, I think being a head coach previously, that kind of helped ease Mus's nerves at times too, because Corey's been in some of these same situations. Like, he's been in charge of an entire team too, so he can kind of lean on some of that past experience, but he can also take things from other coaches on the staff, the support staff, from Mus himself, and, you know, just always looking to improve as a coach. And I think we understand that Mus is a really creative mind. Like, all the guys on his staff are super creative, and I think that alone, that challenged Corey to be, you know, a little bit more open-minded and, you know, just kind of be a little bit more creative. And so I would say that's probably the top two couple of things that he learned in year one. It was pretty cool talking to him.
That's good information for sure. And a guy that you can glean a lot of information off of as a understudy to Musselman, A, but B, a guy that's been there as the head coach, knows what it takes to be a head coach, and can bring that as the assistant coach. I guess he's not traveling the world right now, going to Vegas and Philadelphia and wherever else, because coronavirus shut that down real quick. All right, moving on. We're going to move to the women's side of the basketball court now and talk about Jersey Wolfenbarger, a huge pickup for Coach Mike Nabors and his staff. And they just seem to be on a roll recently, picking up the number one grad transfer, picking up Wolfenbarger for the next class. How big is this Wolfenbarger commit, Scotty, from what you can gather?
Yeah, so I wrote a story on Jersey. I talked to her high school coach at Fort Smith Northside, Ricky Smith. My first job out of college, I wrote for the Times Record in Fort Smith, and my beat was Northside. And so, like, my first year there, I was covering Ricky Smith, who I think is the GOAT in women's or girls' high school basketball in Arkansas. He's won 7 state championships now, and I think he's been at Northside for like 25, 26 years. And he had a run from like 99 to 2002 where they won 4 straight state titles. Like,
dang,
that Northside girls program is known across the country. And Ricky was really good talking to me yesterday. He said that Jersey, quote, is a once-in-a-lifetime type player at the University of Arkansas.
That's saying something.
That's incredible. Like, I really didn't know what to say when he told me that. But the reason, one of the reasons that I believe wholeheartedly that he believes himself saying that is that he's coached some really, really, really good players in the past. Mm-hmm. And he's had the opportunity to coach teams at Nike All-American camps. And in 2019, he was one of the two coaches, or one of the two head coaches at the Jordan Brand Classic in Las Vegas. And he coached on that team that he coached out there, a girl named Aaliyah Boston.
Yeah.
Was on that team.
Yeah.
And if you don't know who Aaliyah Boston is, she was SEC Freshman of the Year, SEC Defensive Player of the Year, her freshman season at South Carolina. I mean, she can do it all. And one of the more productive players in the country. And Ricky Smith thinks that Jersey is one of those type of players, and she hasn't reached her potential yet. I mean, this girl's a 6'4 guard, and Ricky's like, you don't see girls that size doing the things that she does. Mm-hmm. And she jumped from, he said, 5'11 to 6'3 in a year, and she had a phenomenal year. And he said that she struggled some with her game trying to adjust to her growth. That's wow. That's unbelievable to me. And another thing he said that was kind of blew my mind a little bit. He said before she leaves Arkansas, if she's not already there yet, she's going to be a one name player. Like, and he went Kobe, LeBron, Serena, Tiger, Jersey, Corliss. Like he thinks that she's going to be one of those type players. Like she's a cornerstone. He thinks that she's going to open the floodgates for younger players who blow up the way that Jersey has. She's going to open the floodgates for them to come to Arkansas and build something here.
And Nabors needs these type of players, Scotty. He has to compete with the South Carolinas and the Mississippi States. And Mississippi State lost their head coach, Vic Schaefer, who went to Texas. And, you know, you may see that as an opening for maybe an Arkansas to step up there and be in the top three with, I guess A&M would be another one with Gary Blair in women's basketball. South Carolina is not going anywhere. You just
right.
straight up, you know that is going to be there. They have the talent, and almost all of them are young. They were the number one team. They were the favorite to win the title this year if they would have had the women's NCAA tournament.
Don Staley claimed a national championship.
Yeah.
Regardless, like they didn't even have a tournament, but she claimed it. It's hard to argue against that.
It is. And so you have to compete with those. So you need Jersey. You need to pull in the number one recruit in Slocum. You need all the number one grad transfer in Slocum. You need all of those weapons to even compete in this league and want to be mentioned in the top four. And I think that's where Nabors wants to be. He obviously doesn't want to just be top four. He wants to be number one. You can tell that by the way he talks, and he wants to do that at Arkansas. But he's going to have to pull in some players, and not losing Jersey is a huge, huge addition for this team and for Nabors in his program moving forward.
That's a big deal. And he's got Jersey, like you mentioned, Destiny Slocum too, and Ilana Eaton. That girl can fill it up.
Yeah.
And then there's another girl in Bentonville, Miriam Duda. I think I said her name right. She's another one. She's one of the elite prospects in the country too. And I would think that proximity to Arkansas
helps
for sure. So, man, if he could, they find a way to somehow land her. I mean, this program is like, we right now we believe that program, like before Jersey committed, I think we were all kind of like-minded. Like, we see this program is really on the up and up. And you add a player like her, Ricky Smith says she's a program changer. She's a cornerstone.
Talking to Nabors, I think he relayed expectations for this program the best that I have heard it so far. He said, when I first got here, we had a struggle the first year. And he said, we would get close in some games. And really in the first 2 years, it would be, oh, you were within 2 points to Tennessee. Like, that was a really good game. Good job to your team. You were within a few points of Kentucky. Like, hey, you're really close. And he said, and then we get blown out by South Carolina and the A&Ms and everything. But people were like, hey, you're doing a great job. You're getting close. He said, now, I believe they've beaten Tennessee. They have beaten Tennessee the past 2 years. He said, Tennessee, you have to remember, is a perennial powerhouse in women's college basketball. Yeah, they don't have Pat Summitt anymore, but they are the blue blood of women's college basketball. They are the Connecticut of the SEC, basically. And like, Connecticut does it on a whole nother level, but before there was Connecticut, there was Tennessee. And he said, and we're expected now by the fan base and by everybody to beat Tennessee every single year. He said, and it's not going to happen every single year. Tennessee's out there recruiting just like us. But he said, the expectations have shifted. And this is just year three of, after we beat Tennessee, they said, oh, you played an okay game getting out there, but it was a good job to get the win. He said, the expectation is to win now. And when we had to come back against A&M, that was a huge game, but it was almost not, oh my gosh, it's a Cinderella run in the SEC tournament again. It was, oh yeah, A&M was good, but Arkansas's just as good. They could win. Too. Yeah. And he said, so expectations are shifting. So he's got, you know, now you got to feed that beast in a way. You have to continue to recruit and continue to get better and better. And I think that Arkansas can now thrust themselves in the conversation of the upper tier, which I think is the top four in the league. And I think that Arkansas can put themselves there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's pretty safe to say that they are way past moral victories. Like, yeah, it's about stacking victories on top of each other, wins, momentum building wins, big wins. Mm-hmm. They're way past the, hey, we hung around with this team for however many minutes. I mean, they're fighting for, you make a run to the SEC tournament finals the year before, and then you knock off a SEC power in Texas A&M this past SEC tournament. Dang. And then you land a kid like Jersey Wolfenbarger, the number one grad transfer.
Destiny Slocum.
And Ilana Eaton. You're on the up and up. Like, moral victories are a thing of the past.
Yeah, Dungy's coming back for her senior year. Amber Ramirez is coming back. This team doesn't lose just a whole lot. They lose Tolfrey. But Tolfrey wasn't even projected to be a huge part of this team. She was expected to be kind of a three-point specialist, but not an all-SEC-type performer that she was this past year. So who's going to be the next Tolfrey? Who can they develop into that? Who can they get developed into just all around great athletes to push this team into what I think that really where you want to be is a top four in and out every single year. South Carolina, they've made it into that top four really in and out every single year. I'm going to be interested to see what happens with A&M as soon as they lost Kennedy Carter, who was a draft pick in the WNBA draft, but I'm sure Gary Blair will be just fine at A&M.
He's going to go find another one.
I consider them in the top. Mississippi State, and I'm interested to see how that transfers with Vic Schaefer no longer there. But I think Arkansas right now can either – they were claiming about the five spot, but they tied for fourth this year. I think now that they've solidified themselves in the top tier of the league, and it'll be interesting to see this system, this program that Neighbors has built here at the U of A.
For sure. One more note on – Jersey, you know, talking to Ricky Smith, Ricky Smith and Mike Neighbors have been friends for a long time. Like, when Neighbors was the girls basketball coach at Bentonville, their teams played each other. And I mean, Ricky and Mike, they're like on a first name basis. Like, when I was talking to Ricky, he kept calling Mike Neighbors Mike. And he's like, I don't mean that as a sign of disrespect. It's just that we go back a long ways. And I remember Ricky saying that, you know, back early in Jersey's high school career, Ricky called Mike Neighbors and was like, hey, man, I've got this kid. She's unbelievable. She's coming. And Ricky remembers Mike Neighbors saying, I've never heard you talk like this about a girl before. You know, I'm going to take your word for it. And Neighbors was the first one to offer her when she was like 5'6". And, you know, she's like 5'6", around 100 pounds and as a freshman. And now she's almost a foot taller.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, considered a top 20 player in the country. And Ricky Smith was like, Mike Neighbors did, you know, just about did everything right during her recruitment. And he kind of put himself out there, kind of took a chance at the time on a kid who was a little bit unknown. But whatever he did really paid off. And Ricky was talking about how neighbors gave Jersey a clear roadmap on, like, if you want to come here, this is, you know, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I can assure you of. And, you know, if you decide to commit to us, this is, you know, this is our plan for you. And Ricky just went on and on and on about Jersey. And he did give her one piece of advice before she decided to make her decision. He said, you know, when you do make your decision, notify your parents and don't tell anybody. Sit on it for 48 hours or so and see if you still feel the same way. And last week she called, Jersey called Ricky Smith and was like, I feel like I'm ready to commit. I've waited 2 weeks and I still feel the same way.
Good.
Now, as of me calling you, that I did the day that she made the decision. So she's pumped.
Nice. And it's not to be understated that Neighbors has put a top tier number one draft pick into the WNBA as well. He knows how to develop talent into being the best at the college level. And he did that with Kelsey Plum at Washington. All right. We teased this a little bit, so we'll hit on this just slightly. Talking about Northside, there's a lot of Northside connections to the U of A and to really to college sports all around, Scotty. We're listing off just a few. I'll go ahead and let you do that. But there's a few connections to that. Northside program is really a good sports program.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just it's really cool. My year in Fort Smith was really interesting. Like, it was eye-opening because I come from a really, really small high school that doesn't produce, you know, any kind of athletic talent. And so it was kind of crazy for me to go there to see, like, the best of the best pretty much in Arkansas high school sports. And my first year when I was, you know, in Fort Smith, I've said this like a million times probably, but I covered Isaiah Joe as a sophomore when he was, you know, starting to get his name out there as one of the, you know, one of the best perimeter shooters, not only in the state, but in his class. There was another point guard at Northside named Tevin Brewers, probably one of my favorite players I've ever covered. He was a 5'7" animal. And he was criminally under-recruited, I think. You know, he had to go the JUCO route. Now he's playing ball at Florida International and playing pretty good minutes. And there's another kid named Trey Norwood who's playing defensive back at Oklahoma. They all played on the same high school basketball team that won a state championship. I think it was in 2017, I believe. Just tons of talent in Northside. And then you got Jalen Williams coming up from Northside in this 2020 class. Throw in Jersey Wolfenbarger. That is some premier talent coming out of one high school. And then there's a football connection. You remember, I don't know if you remember, Datrion Dean played defensive line at Arkansas, came from Northside. So that school in the last 5-6 years has been a
hotbed.
Pretty much been a hotbed for talent. And, you know, they've sent talent, you know, pretty much everywhere. I remember when I was working down there in the football program in the first few years of their new head coach's tenure, Mike Fallor, he'd sent, I think, at least one kid to a Power 5 program in like two of his first 3 years or three of his first 4 years. So, I mean, they pump out talent, and Eric Burnett and Ricky Smith have done a really good job. Eric Burnett's won a couple of state championships in the last 4 years with that talent. Jalen Williams won one last year, and Ricky Smith won his seventh last year too. So Northside is not only winning state championships at a pretty good clip now, like, they're producing some top talent that, you know, eventually is coming to Arkansas and paying some pretty good dividends at this point.
Yeah, for sure. It's a high school program on the rise, a high school program to keep an eye out on if you are into recruiting and seeing who the next.
And Isaiah Joe's little brother.
Yeah.
Jacob, he's coming.
Exactly.
Got a smooth jumper too.
Okay. I was about to ask.
Huh? Oh yeah. It runs in that blood, I think.
Okay. Is he, what's his size like?
Similar, I think, to Isaiah. You know, when I talked to Isaiah Joe's dad, Derek, last week, you know, he was like, they're kind of late bloomers in his family, but I mean, Jacob's going to be a problem before he gets out of high school too. So that'll be interesting to keep track of for sure.
Keep your eye out on Jacob Joe. Jacob Joe. That runs off the tongue too. That'd be fun. All right. Last thing as we wrap it up here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, let's hit just a little bit of 1994 trivia. 1993-1994 season, the first season that the Razorbacks played in Bud Walton Arena. There's a little bit of trivia for you. Scotty, hit us up with some questions. I'll try and answer them. And then as a tease, we're trying to get this up on the website. We're trying out new things during this COVID-19 season. So if by the time that this podcast is released, we will make sure that it's in the link if it is available on the website.
Hopefully, it will be.
If not, we can link it back later. But keep checking the wholehogsports.com website for some 1994 trivia. All right, Scotty.
Which team did Arkansas beat in the first game played in Bud Walton Arena? A, Missouri. B, Murray State. C, Jackson State. D, Northwestern State.
So a first official game or an exhibition?
No, I mean like the first official game. First official game. On the schedule.
Missouri.
Incorrect.
Dang it. They played Missouri that year, and I remember Missouri's head coach talked to Nolan.
That was the second game.
Oh. All right. Options again.
Murray State, Jackson State, Northwestern State.
Northwestern State.
Incorrect.
Dadgummit. I guess at this point, you got to tell me.
It was Murray State. Murray State was the first opponent Arkansas played in the brand new Bud Walton Arena.
Dang. The Murray State Racers, home of John Morant.
Mm-hmm. That Missouri game was second. And I feel like I threw in that Missouri.
That threw in
Missouri for a good reason, because I know a lot of people just remember that Arkansas just beat Missouri to sleep that night.
Yeah, they did. For sure they did. 2-3 years ago, the SEC Network reran when they did the takeovers during the summer that they do. And they reran all of a bunch of games from the 1993-94 season. I remember watching that Missouri game. Yeah, they ran them out of the gym.
For sure. Which team did Arkansas beat to advance to the 1994 National Championship game? A, Michigan. B, Arizona. C, North Carolina. D, Kentucky.
I know this one. It's Arizona.
That is correct.
Yes. Can you name the other two? Okay, so what were the other two teams in the Final Four?
Oh, Florida was there.
And then you should know the other one.
And Duke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Arizona, Florida, Duke, and Arkansas. I do remember that. Extra trivia for
I feel like a lot of people would think that Kentucky was the other the other SEC team
mm-hmm.
in that Final Four, but it was Florida that year. Let me see what else I've got. Which Razorback made his second start of the season when Arkansas played Duke in the national championship game?
Oh, no.
A, Ken Biley. B, Darnell Robinson. C, Ray Biggers. D, Elmer Martin.
Robinson, B.
Incorrect.
Who was it?
It was Ken Biley.
Made his second start in the national championship
game. Played 3 minutes. He started and played 3 minutes.
Do we know why?
Nolan. Just a hunch he had, I guess.
It obviously didn't work out very well. Well, I mean, I guess it worked out just fine. They won. All right, hit me with one more here on some Razorback trivia on the Basketball Podcast in Mid-America. We don't want to give you all the answers here.
I thought this one was pretty fun. Alex Dillard.
Yes.
Scored 39 points and made 12 of 22 threes off the bench against which team? Delaware State. B, LSU. C, SMU. D, Northwestern State.
I feel like I'm just going to go with it. A.
That is correct.
Let's go.
Career high, 39 points.
Delaware State. I thought I remembered that happening. 39, is that what you said?
39.
That's insane.
Yep.
Mason Jones made that seem regular this year with his 30-point games, but you got to remember how hard it is to get 30-point games, and he was one away from 40.
For sure. Especially on that team. Like, you got Scotty, Corey, Beck, yeah. Corliss.
hey, just feed the hot hand, and he obviously had it that
yeah, way. Off 39 off the bench.
Jeez. You say he went 12 of
22, 12 of 22 from three.
From three. So, all right, just some quick addition here. That tells me that 36 of his 39 came from beyond the arc.
I think he made 1 2-point shot and a free throw. I think that's right.
Dang.
Yeah, he filled it up.
That's insane. All right. Make sure to check out the trivia on wholehogsports.com. There'll be more of that. Make sure to subscribe to the whole basketball podcast of Mid-America as well. We are wherever you are listening to this right now. There will be a subscribe button. Hit that. Scotty and I will come right into your inbox so you don't have to come and search us and find us anymore. That you can just, it will just appear. It's like magic. And who doesn't like magic? All right. Well, for Scotty Bordeline, I am Seth Campbell saying so long, and we will see you back here next week.